Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talked to two fellow members of the local media, Tony Saxon of Guelph Today and Graham McNaughton of the Guelph Mercury Tribune. So why invite the distinguished competition to come on to the podcast for a turn? Well, it is the Christmas season, but it's also the end of the year, and that means it's time to take stock of the year that was at City Council. Recapping the year around the horseshoe is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, it's been a very busy couple of months at City Council with the debate over the 2018 budget, the merger of Guelph Hydro with Electra, and also just the regular business of City Council. All in all, it went by rather like a whirlwind, but it seems important here, at the end of the year, to stop and take stock of everything that's happened, but I needed some help. Where could I find some people not on council that paid as close attention to what happens at City Council as I do? Well, at the media table, obviously. While I get an opportunity every week to remark about my opinions concerning the work of City Council, the only time I get to talk to my colleagues about what's happening is maybe a few choice comments at the end of the meeting before everyone runs off to file their story. So this is one part, a chance to hear their thoughts about council from the people covering council for the other outlets, not Guelph Politico. And it's also a holiday social for the Guelph City Hall Press Club. But for the most part, it's all business as we dig into some of the serious issues and debates that have come before council in the last couple of months, including how the 2018 budget process shook out this year, the way public information and debate was handled leading up to the Hydro merger also, and we also talk about the year on council generally, including the present committee structure and how it went almost zap by accident earlier this year, and we talk about our own work in the media and the criticism that the city is not being as well served without the presence of a daily paper. Plus, we look ahead to the coming election year and what people should be on the lookout for as the process begins officially this coming May. On top of that, we also talk with Graham, the latest member of the Guelph Crooked Media Gang, about joining the Royal City team this past June, his experience covering other councils, and why, by comparison, Guelph Council is surprisingly more functional than it appears. As the late great Leonard Nimoy once said, before we unlock the future, we must first find the keys to the past. So let's do some locksmithing on this week's podcast, which is also the final Politicast of 2017. So I caught up with Tony Saxon and Graham McNaughton last week in studio.
Hi, it's Tony Saxon. I am with GuelphToday.com, the online news site in Guelph, and before that, for many years, with the Guelph Mercury newspaper.
And I'm Graham McNaughton, the new City Hall reporter for the Guelph Mercury Tribune. Started here back in June. I was out in Durham region covering council out there, and I guess now I'm back home.
Are you from Guelph originally?
Bellwood, actually. Okay. I grew up in
Close-ish.
Well, Guelph was the big city when I was growing up.
And you've been settling in okay? Tony and me have been treating you okay at the media table? It's
On record, yes, you guys have been treating me just great.
I love that caveat, on record. You know what, Graham, why don't we start with you, because you covered Durham Council. So, I mean, how has that, covering Guelph Council, been different, like maybe personality-wise or procedurally-wise? Because
I guess procedurally, actually, I think so far, at least from what I've seen, Guelph has it down. Durham, I know there was some issues with bending the rules, or at least breaking the rules. Especially, I know the big contentious issue out in Durham was the Durham York Energy Center, which is a massive $300 million incinerator that got rammed through pretty quickly. And there was some ombudsman investigations about meetings around that, which were entertaining. And then coming out, I think the one that really nailed it for me was that, well, between Durham and Oshawa, before I moved, the one big story out of Oshawa was that the audit for Oshawa City Hall is like all these things that were going wrong, mm-hmm. you know, and things, you know, stuff that wasn't being done correctly. And then I come here and it was like the first meeting I went to is like the KPMG audit. I'm like, oh, good. I get a nice, good story right off the bat. And the audit's like, everything's being done as it should be. And I'm like, oh, no salacious material.
Tony, I think we're being screwed out of controversy.
Yeah, we've had some big issues, but the controversy doesn't seem to be quite as prevalent these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you should say that because, you know, you go to Overheard or, you know, on the comment page of Today or something, and, you know, something comes up that's moderately controversial at City Hall, and it's like, these people are corrupt and they're stupid and they don't know what they're doing. And then, you know, down the road in Durham.
Oh, yeah. No, we get it on our Facebook page all the time. People talking about how corrupt stuff is. And I'm like, no, this is actually, the show's pretty well run here.
We don't know how corrupt it is, but maybe we're being lulled into a false sense of security, too. I don't know.
No, quite possibly. It's going to say the biggest controversies are the ones you don't know about yet.
Very true. Speaking of that, I think it's, you know, to start generally about the media, because, you know, we've kind of got it hammered this year. There was Phil Ault's comments before the election merger vote that, you know, we don't have the ability to do the due diligence. And Mayor Guthrie famously, Tony's famous Godfather picture about how, you know, we're talking about 4.84 when that's not the real deal. How do you feel about the job we're doing about covering City Hall? You know, are we treading water? Are we, you know, Tony, you've been at this a long time.
Well, yeah, I think we're doing as good a job as we can do. And Phil Ault had some had a decent point in that there isn't as much in-depth reporting as there was when the Guelph Mercury was here. Now, I would say that more the Guelph Mercury in its heyday, when there was 12 reporters and 4 or 5 editors running around the newsroom, and you could send a reporter for 3 weeks to do an in-depth story on the effects of Guelph Hydro. That hadn't happened for several years. Sort of that romantic version of the Guelph Mercury, I get a little tired of, quite honestly. It's gone. It's never, ever, ever coming back unless somebody wants to lose a couple of $1 million a year. And so the people who are here are working hard to do what they can with what they have. Do we have the time and the resources to do the kind of in-depth stories you see in the Globe and Mail or the Hamilton Spectator? No. And that's just a fact in the new reality, and people have to get used to that.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I remember, like, you know, growing up, and I do remember some of, like, the old, like, when I was younger and seeing some of the Guelph Mercuries. And yeah, you did, like, there was that opportunity for that in-depth reporting. But it, you know, as it is with this industry, it started to go away. And yeah, and, you know, as Tony said, like, it's people are looking back at it with, you know, rose-tinted glasses, remembering how great it used to be, mm-hmm. Forgetting the fact that, you know, the Daily Mercury was on the decline for quite some time, and it was shut down for a reason. It's unfortunate whenever that happens, but
the first victim of the shrinking newspaper industry was long form writing. You just don't have the time or resources to do that anymore, and it disappeared from the Mercury for 2 or 3 years beforehand. That kind of send somebody away and let them dig, and maybe for a couple of days they don't come up with anything, that type of thing. Just can't afford to do that anymore, and neither could the Guelph Mercury for 2 or 3 or 4 years. So let's not be too romantic. I miss it. We all miss it.
Everybody
misses someone coming up with that, like, 2-week in-depth feature where they talk to 25 people. But A, it doesn't exist anymore, and quite frankly, most people don't want to read long-form writing. Some do.
True.
Believe me, in the digital world, people don't.
I was going to say long form. You don't even get people reading some briefs anymore. Like, you get people that, like, again, on the, you know, the heart back on our, you know, on Facebook, where you know, and you see it with any social media where you get people that are commenting on stories and you're looking at the comments. It's like, you didn't read it.
Yeah, like, read the headline.
Yeah, you read the headline and made assumptions.
75% of Guelph City Council stories do not get the readership of a cat stuck up a tree or a new Thai restaurant opening in the South End. The big stories do, the important issues do, but quite frankly, a lot don't, and that's a fact.
And in their defense, pad Thai is awesome. And I'm always on the hunt for a good pad Thai.
I was going to say,
cats are awesome too, but
I was going to say, don't forget Taco Bell opening.
And Taco Bell maybe opening. And not to make too much light of it, but the reality is what people want to read. And they do care about the issues. They do care about the city. And it is important to cover city council and all the issues. We're not saying it's not. But people have to take a real look at what we do and how we do it and how we can do it.
If you want it, you have to want it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And my editor, Doug, actually came up with a good term for the city hall journalism that I haven't heard before, but now that I've heard it, it's like, okay, that's the way to call it. He calls it broccoli journalism, where it's like, it's the healthy stuff. You have to have it. Yeah. You may not like it, but it's necessary.
Yeah. But, you know, broccoli in a pad thai stir fry, nice. Am I wrong?
I haven't had lunch yet, Adam.
Well, I'll speed this up then. just generally, and I know, Graham, you missed the first 5 months, but what do you think the message coming out of council this year was? Was there like an overarching sort of theme that, you know, we can glom on?
Oh, without a doubt, there's an election next year. That was the overwhelming theme. I've never seen so many long-winded everybody thanking everybody and having a five-minute say on everything to make sure that they were seen as noble and riding into the night on the white steed. That was a lot of politicking going on. But overall, I was surprised how, relatively speaking, council got along. There were some moments, some really great moments, quite frankly, especially if you have a camera in your hand. On like Donkey Kong, I think I used once this year, and I've been waiting to use that at a council meeting for a long time. But overall, the split and the derision didn't seem to be quite the extent that it has at times in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think as a whole, council was working towards one goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I would agree with that. There are times that, you know, it did seem to bend, but there was never a break. And you know, it seemed to be on particular issues too, whether that was internet voting or, you know, the fracas when Committee of the Whole was almost canceled. But, you know, the difference between bending and breaking, of course, is you can bend, but you can also bend back. And I think that's what we saw by and large.
Yeah, I know, like, before I started here, I had a sit down with my predecessor, Doug Hallett, and he was talking about how contentious a lot of the council stuff was. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to be kind of in my element here with how Durham was. And I get here, and everyone's getting along well. It's like, oh, maybe he was here for too long, and this is contentious for him. Like, I'm used to, like, people yelling at each other and, like, personal insults being thrown at each other.
Maybe. It's funny to think about what's contentious to some. But you did mention the election, Tony. So I think it's pretty clear that a lot of people around the horseshoe are going to be standing again next year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe in the broader landscape of the city, you know, is this going to be, you know, a contentious election like the 2014 was? Or are we looking at maybe something more akin to 2010 where it seemed like there wasn't much going on contentious-wise. You know, it seemed to be fairly smooth sailing in the city. There was no, like, Urbicon that's on anybody's back or...
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be that one thing that all the people running can sort of hook onto. There's going to be probably two or three councillors not running. I've heard of two not running. Mm. There's going to be some strong candidates challenging people and who are going to lose their seat. I think we're going to see 4 or 5 new people on council. And once again, I make the call. I'd like to see more young people. I'd like to see more ethnic diversity on council just to represent this city a little bit better in what it is. But it seems that doesn't happen. Even the people challenging the incumbents seem to be the regulars too.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we saw what happened last week, the hydro merger, is that there is going to be some people that are going to be very vocal next year, as Tony said, challenging for council seats or just, you know, having that being one of the issues that drives people out. The other one I think that's going to be a big one coming out next year is the solid waste review.
Right.
And, you know, the privatization thing gets thrown around a lot. And especially with when that review is slated to come out, is very close to the nomination period for people that want to run. So you could get a lot of people that don't like the results of that review, whatever it may be, and said, you know what, I'm running. And like, oh, it's the nomination period's open.
You don't do reviews so that they come out and say, hey, we should be spending more money. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a review come out and say that. They're looking at ways to save money and be more efficient.
Yeah. It seems interesting that they took it off the table for the fall, either because maybe they're trying to pad as you're saying, reviews don't tell you should invest more. Reviews tend to tell you where you can cut or where you can save or where you can outsource or what have you. But it does seem that it was taken, you know, in the theory that maybe council can only deal with so many controversies at a time, that this was the way it was going, and that all the solid waste workers who are concerned about privatization maybe should be a little bit more concerned this Christmas time.
Yeah, I think they were taking their time with this one, particularly given sort of late last year, beginning of this year, how the variances came out in that department and those numbers. So I think they want to get it right. And there was a lot on the plate this year. There was a lot of stuff for city staff to be doing that needed prioritized.
Interesting, we haven't heard anything about boulevard maintenance. I would have thought that would have been the controversial review. But to go back to
I care about my boulevards, Adam. Don't you mock me.
But to go back to what you were saying about privatization, that is so sensitive to people. And to tie this to the Electra merger as well, people think that's been privatized. People think Guelph Hydro has been privatized. Mm-hmm. And you hear that reaction. It's like, well, now we're privatized, and what are we going to do? And it's like, well, 3% of Electra is privately owned. So I think that goes to the delay as well. They want to make sure that they're explaining the situation well, which is something, again, I don't think was done with Electra, speaking of cramming issues in at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Do you think that the merger is going to play a big role that, you know, that, you know, we had, I mean, it wasn't a very controversial vote. It was 10-3. I know we talked about not doing the numbers before the podcast, but that one sticks out to me because I wrote it down several times. But, you know, you did have Phil Ault and James Gordon stand on general principle about local ownership. Bob Bell, I'm not entirely sure what his – I think it was, you know, why not sell if we're merging into a bigger thing?
I think Bob's point, too, was maybe this isn't the time to move it, that we could maybe get a better or a different deal, which enhanced sort of Guelph's standing and control.
Yeah.
But sometimes the deal on the table is the best one. And there was a lot of things behind closed doors, a lot of details, and a lot of – for people to say that why don't we merge with Kitchener-Wilmot Hydro – I'm sure that was looked at and was that notion was rejected at this time on sound financial ground. These things don't happen in a vacuum.
Right, but I think there was I think, you know, to go back to the effect, I think if people might have been felt more comfortable if there was like some sort of reporter saying, we looked at merger possibility A, and here's why, 1, 2, 3, we didn't do it. The rationale was, it was we're dealing with, I guess, I think the term was proprietary knowledge. So, you know, things about, you know, the books and the accounting of different agencies. I get that. You don't want to release that. But, I mean, on the other hand, these are public utilities as well. Mm-hmm. And there should be a bit more disclosure. We should at least know the reasons why. You can't just say the answer is 42 without showing how you took this massive equation and got to 42.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, especially and not just for us, but for even people in those municipalities as well, like, I think, you know, like, they should deserve to know if their hydro utility is losing money.
Mm.
You know, like, that's, again, just going back to your general transparency thing.
Right. And I did find it curious that the vote couldn't be delayed because four of the Electra partners had already voted to say yay to Guelph entering, which I find bizarre because they are deciding we're in before we decide we're in.
Yeah, I thought that was weird too, where you had all these people, you know, these other municipalities have made the decision already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and Trust Us Electra was the best, maybe it isn't the greatest sales job ever.
Yeah.
The benefits of the Electra were detailed. The city did make an effort to sell that move. But yeah, we'd like to know maybe why they were better than the others?
No, I'd like to know that as well. Like, you know, like, and, you know, like, you had all the delegates coming up, you know, the ones that were okay with a merger, not necessarily with Electra, but, you know, going back to what, because I know Bob Bell was talking about how, you know, why, because he said if there was a merger, wanted it with a more local utility, you know, like, put out those reasons why Electra was the better option over that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
leave Electra alone. They've suffered enough. But I do want to address general closed meetings, because I do find this one of the most frustrating aspects of covering council, that if, you know, certainly within the case of the Strategies and Options Committee, it seemed like a lot was going on behind closed doors. And mm-hmm. what I found interesting, I can't remember his name, speaking of not remembering things, but the man who does the reviews of the closed meetings, when
the
he came forward...
Are you talking on a provincial or a municipal level?
No. It was a couple of months ago at the meeting. He was doing a review of the closed meetings about the Brandt group.
Right.
And he said, you know, just because council has the option to go into closed meetings doesn't mean they must go into closed meetings, which says to me that...
Amberlee Gavel.
Thank you, Amberlee Gavel. That the situations to take in a closed meeting seem a little bit more looser than... council would have us believe. Now, I'm not saying this is malicious in intent. I think they're playing on the safe side of things. But what it says to me is that there should be a lot more of this in the open than there is. And
there needs to be more consideration and always jumping on that safe side.
Right.
Maybe start looking at that gray area a little more and taking some of those issues and bringing them forward. It just helps, with transparency and also a bit of trust in the decision process. I mean, there's so many closed-door meetings. Most of them, obviously, for good reason.
Sure.
But I'd love to know. I'd love to see an assessment of closed-door meetings and what percentage could have been out in the public and maybe should have been out in the public.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, too, because it does irk me somewhat when Mayor Guthrie says, in the interest of transparency, I'll tell you what happened in the closed meetings. We were given information, and we gave direction. Well, that doesn't tell me anything.
You're just angry because you sat there for 3 hours one night for a closed-door meeting and then got sent home.
Yeah.
I didn't get sent home. The meeting was over, and I left.
Same thing.
And I got a lot of work done in those 3 hours, sitting alone in the council chambers.
I will say the one thing that is nice, though, with the closed meetings here is that it's the councilors go into a back room and do it.
Mm.
I'm used to... in Durham, where I had to quickly grab everything and leave the room.
Kind of
like what happened to that guy with Niagara Region.
That's right.
Because I remember the one time where I had stepped out, I had to talk to someone on the phone or whatever, and I came back and all my stuff is just out front of council chambers. You know, my laptop, there's no one standing there, my laptop, camera, all that sitting there. And I'm like, oh.
It's like, okay. It's like the old joke about coming home and the wife's throwing everything on the lawn. That's I do appreciate it, because I did hear that story too, and I was like, well, what don't they just do like what Guelph does and go in the back room? And then, you know, because I think at the very least that does reinforce the idea that the council chambers is a public space,
mm-hmm.
and that if you are a member of the public, you have a right to be there, because, you know, I've had people message me in my coverage of councils hey, can anyone go to city council meetings? Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of a no-brainer to me, but I think, you know, in speaking of messageness about openness and transparency, you know, that should, you know, we should be doing more to make sure that people are invited to be part of the conversation, even if that just means sitting in the gallery and listening to the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You got to walk the walk, not just talk the talk sometimes, and that doesn't happen all the time, or as much as it should.
Mm-hmm. Tony, I'm going to direct this particular one at you because having mentioned it a few minutes ago, but the Committee of the Whole, and this is going to come up in the spring when the full report comes back. Do you feel that's been working out?
On a administrative level, perhaps. I'm not sure how it works. Sometimes I just don't see the point. You basically end up double dipping on issues and having people just discuss the same issue twice with the same points sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's streamlined the process, which should be the point of it.
Mm.
It's made some meetings more accessible. There's some afternoon meetings, which some people don't like, and people can delegate at either one, but people have a sense by the time it gets to the council that it's already, and that was always the big argument, that it's already decided, so what's the point when really it hasn't? But maybe it I'm just not sure of the reason, to be quite, for lack of a better description.
Hmm. I was going to say, I can't comment as much on Guelph because, yeah, I wasn't here when it happened. But at around the same time, Durham Region did the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Where they went to a committee of the whole structure. And they, I believe they actually cited Guelph as one of the examples where they said, oh, it's working out there, so we're going to do it here.
That must have been before the May council
meeting. Yeah, yeah. again, yeah, it was a lot of the same criticism was brought up there, out there, whereas, like, you know, like, by the time it gets to council, it's like, yeah, it's already been decided. And the reasoning was, it was like, well, councillors will have a chance to voice their opinion on a committee they may not otherwise sit on. It's like, but councillors already had the option to visit other committees and, you know, were able to speak as a non-voting member. Just very few actually did it.
Right.
And I imagine it was a safe bet. It was the same here.
Mm.
Where you would have non-committee, you know, like the option was available for non-committee councillors to speak as a non-voting member. But the one thing that, you know, at least here that I like a bit better is that you have committee of the whole is at the beginning of the month and council is at the end of the month. In Durham, it's 1 week after the other. Where you have week one is committee of the whole, week two is council. So it's like your time for sober thought, if you want to call Senate analogy out. Is less than a week, really.
Interesting. It's funny to talk about how everybody mixes it up and does things differently with working within the same piece of paper, the Municipal Act. I do wonder, to get back to what Tony was saying, though, because Cam addressed this on Twitter to me, how, you know, there's confusion about it wasn't council, it was technically the shareholders of the Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc. And I understand that distinction being there, but he wasn't directing at me specifically. But there is a bit of a knowledge gap for a lot of people who don't live and breathe this stuff, that, you know, there is a difference between committee and council and the shareholders. It's three different bodies, even though it's made up of the same 13 people. And of course, if you're just sort of paying cursory attention, you know, you don't really know the difference. And I think that's maybe the biggest flaw in the committee structure, is that it is the same 13 people that it goes to at the end of the month. And so you think, well, this has already been hashed out. You know, what is there left to say? And the truth is, you know, maybe you can make a bigger punch at the end of the month and then you can in committee. Who knows?
And as Graham pointed out, having it at the beginning of the month allows people to maybe rally and educate themselves and or rally for the cause, so to speak.
That's right.
But the shareholders thing, I mean, there is a legal delineation there, but for the person sitting at home looking at a decision on a matter, their council is making that decision no matter how they're sitting.
No, true. Exactly.
Yeah. But that was my point, too.
Yeah.
4.84%.
Oh no, it's Cam. Yeah, I felt the disturbance in the force. Anything you guys feel like was a bigger, maybe should have been a bigger story this year, or anything, maybe the reverse, you thought that was maybe too big a deal?
Most recently, the Guelph Neighborhood Support Coalition came up at budget with a request for another $100,000. And no one is denying the wonderful work they do. No one is denying the more wonderful work they can do with some extra funding. I've been to lots of their things. They're an amazing organization. And as a taxpayer, I have no problems spending an extra $2 or $3 to help fund that organization. But it was about the process to me that was circumvented or just sped up to get them before council to ask for that more money. They have agreements with council, this organization, but so do a lot of other organizations who could make a very solid case for what they could do with more money, too. And I just felt it was a little unfair to the process. Not a knock against the purpose or the point, but the process is there for a reason. And this also happened earlier when Riker Holdings came up with that development, and it was sped through the planning process to get them before council, 75 Dublin, to get them before council. There was some time constraints, and I understand that. I'm sure I could find 10 or 12 developers in the city who could say, well, we have some time constraints too, and if we got before council quicker, it would be better for our development too.
Right.
I think you have a process for a reason, and they have to be adhered to. so that it's a fair process.
75 Dublin still in front of the OMB, even though it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and they've submitted a second application now for the exact same development because they're trying to go around, I guess.
We're reforming the OMB, because people spend thousands of dollars they don't have or shouldn't be spending on. We're talking about a story, I believe, now on that building.
Yeah.
It's going to get built. It's just a matter of how high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's still, to your point, it's still a five-story proposal, even though.
Yeah. It's just a matter of whose name is at the end of the document, really. Or, as to who's putting the official application forward.
Right. Right. And I don't think that hasn't come to council yet. How about looking forward, from you guys, what should people have on their radar as we've talked about the service review, but is there anything else pressing, you think, before election time?
Baker Street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That thing is moving now with some real concrete, not just sort of philosophical reports that get stuck on a shelf with the other reports from the last 10 years, 8 years. Things are moving now with that, with the RFQ, and with, we're going to see requests for proposals. We're going to start to see some design work, I think, on the library. Concrete things are happening now with that project, and I think council's got it on a front burner, and that's going to be one of the big things happening in the next year.
Mm-hmm. I think the business case from the library board comes back in January.
Yeah.
That's right, and the end of January is the end of the request for pre-qualification,
right,
and moving forward, which are all concrete positive steps in the process that have to be done, but they're finally happening. They were just talked about for years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we sort of cleared Baker Street and then the service reviews, and it'll be curious to see what sort of counselor the moves they'll make to try and pump themselves up ahead of the election,
right.
As we were talking about earlier, where you have a lot of that politicking and council over the last year. I imagine a lot of it's going to ramp up.
And it's a short nomination window. It's May 1st till, I think, July 23rd is that.
Yeah, because so, I know before it was January to September, they cut it in half.
Yeah, so, people have to make up their minds pretty quick if they're on the fence about whether or not they want to keep going.
Another pretty interesting one, maybe not so interesting now, but it's a very important one, and moving forward is going to be interesting. What came up this week is the Claire Maltby design and the planning for that whole area. It's rather technical at this stage, but that is dictating what that end of the city is going to look like in for the next 10, 20 years as Guelph moves further south. It's a very important plan, and it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. It's going to be interesting to see how the former jail lands and the former Turfgrass Institute lands as the city tries to buy that and then resell it to a developer.
Mm-hmm.
That whole process, these are huge sort of city-changing deals that are very important. They'll move along fairly slowly, but these are huge deals that will change the shape of the city.
Yeah, and
literally.
Yeah, kind of the last two big open pieces of land in the city, within the borders anyway, that are left to develop. And then, there's a lot of stuff moving with, brownfields in town, a lot of, some redevelopment there. So it's, we're talking 20, maybe 10 or 20 more years in the future. But for people who aren't liking condos and liking high rises or mid rises, it's fortunately something we're all going to be getting used to.
At least two or three more of those are going to be built in the next year or so around the downtown area.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys looking forward to the election at all? You looking forward to that coverage? Two elections this year.
At least they're not at the same time. So a bit of a relief there. It's just constant go, go, go for a while.
Yeah, very true.
I was going to say next year is going to be a busy year for sure. Between the elections. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, I was going to say that too. It's going to be a very busy time, but elections are always fun because people get put on the spot and you sort of can't hide behind things. You've got to say what you feel about certain issues when you get in those little Ward 3 debate and you're sitting there in front of 25 people and they want an answer.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sort of fluff that off.
hope it's more than 25. That makes me sad.
26 it is.
Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in and doing this. It's nice to get together outside the council chambers and Guelph's Crooked Media. I appreciate it. If anyone wants to check out your work on the internet, how can they find you? Tony, why don't you start?
Yeah, GuelphToday.com and Tony@GuelphToday is my email address.
Storm going all the way this year?
Storm are not going all the way this year. Storm is my therapy. I cover the Guelph Storm for therapy from those six-hour council meetings.
Doesn't sound like therapy. They're not going all the way.
At least Guelph Storm are actually doing okay this year. Like, I'm coming from Oshawa here, and they're down bottom of the league right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they were very disappointing out there.
Huh. Well, there you go. We got some OHL talk in.
Yeah, so for me, GuelphMercury.com, you can see my stories plus all the work from my other colleagues there. GMcNaughton@GuelphMercuryTribune.com, you can hit me up, email. I'm also on Twitter @IamGMcNaughton. You'll see a mix of council stories, my comments on just random stuff going on, and pictures of my dog.
It sounds very much like my Twitter feed, except with about the dog. anyway, thanks again, guys. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. And if we don't see each other before, we'll see each other on the 15th for more exciting events at City Council. So thanks again.
Thanks, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And once again, that was Tony Saxon and Graham McNaughton. You can read Saxon every day at GuelphToday.com. And on Twitter @SaxonOnTheStorm. And you can read McNaughton in the physical Trib or online at GuelphMercury.com. And you can find him on social media at @IMGMcNaughton. And that's all for the Guelph Politicast this week. And for this year, the Guelph Politicast will return on January 10th with new, hopefully weekly episodes. So stay tuned for more great coverage coming up in 2018. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter @adamadonaldson. There is also the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. And if you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating, like the 24 people who presently donate to Guelph Politico via Patreon. Your support continues to be very much appreciated, and we look to expand it further going into 2018. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, and until then, see you next time.